Hey, Connie.
Hey, what's up?
It's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Thanks for joining my new podcast. I'm glad to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I think you're the first person I'm having on that I know, like, nothing about. So the first couple people that I've had on are, like, good friends that I've known for a long time or just people I've known a long time, and I know some of their story. But I feel like with you, I met you at one of the taste events, I think, a couple months ago.
Yep.
And you were super cool. Like, I go around trying to introduce myself, and I just, like, I hit it off with you, but we haven't really had a time to hang out.
Yeah.
So I just want to learn more about you, and, like, I'm excited about this time. So where are you? You're wearing an LA hat.
Yeah.
And you're from LA, right?
I am. Well, so a pit stop. I actually grew up in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma?
Yeah. Grew up in Oklahoma. Where at? Outside of Tulsa, in a small city. I wouldn't call it a town, but a small city.
Okay.
Lived there till I was about 15, and then we moved to Orange County, California. And
oh
then
my
I've moved a lot since then. Almost really? Hit every big cities all across the country.
Wow. But how is Oklahoma? Like, small town?
Very small town. I mean, think of all the backwards stuff that you hear on the news that, you know, when it comes to just very challenging politics, very challenging for a queer person to be there, very challenging for minorities to be there,
right.
Everything. So my mom is Bolivian and my dad is born in the United States, German. And
wow.
Our family at that time, you know, was treated pretty badly for being brown. And so
there weren't a lot of brown people.
There weren't at that time at all. And speaking Spanish, like, I didn't learn Spanish because it caused so much, like, negative attention towards us. So my mom and dad spoke and taught my brothers, but they didn't end up teaching me. So
wow. Are you the youngest?
I am the youngest.
How many brothers?
I have two older brothers.
Yeah. And how did they end up in Oklahoma? Is your dad from Oklahoma?
No, he actually was raised in Northern California, and then he had a job opportunity in Oklahoma. And so
wow.
They went from the beginning of elementary all the way to high school and even college in the Midwest. But I escaped, I feel like. My dad had an opportunity to move to California when I was 15, and I instantly took it.
You took it?
Yeah.
And were you out of the closet?
No, I didn't even realize. I was, like, a very, very mute type of child, and I just, like, involved myself in sports and in school. I didn't talk a whole lot. I didn't have very many opinions. And I think that it has a lot to do with feeling like a minority or being pushed kind of away. You're trying to assimilate.
You felt
so
like
much.
You had to, like, stay
yeah.
quiet and shell up.
Yeah. So your voice, a lot of people who live in places like that, you will never really understand your true voice and feel like it matters or important until you get out of there.
Yeah. Were you ashamed of being?
Well, so at that time, yes. I was ashamed of it. I felt, you know, and that's actually something with, you know, your Latin events that you host now. I listen to Latin music, the funniest circus sounding Latin music with my windows rolled down now. I am so proud of it, but it is a dichotomy from where I started because I was so embarrassed. And I just wanted, the reality was, is it's less of embarrassment of like, oh, I just want to fit in. It was more of, I just don't want to get bullied. I mean, the bullying at that time for, you know, brown minorities and, you know, the whole, like, go back to your country and all that stuff, it was hateful. And it made you feel,
like you didn't belong.
Like you didn't belong, but almost, like, challenging you, you know? Like, you almost felt like when a grown man told you that he might punch you type of thing.
Right.
That's how much anger came from. Those words. So it wasn't like someone saying it.
Yeah, and it makes you just, I mean, it changes you.
Yeah.
Like, bullying like that, and it makes you tough or, like, have to act tough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So moving to California is the best thing that ever happened.
Wow.
I moved there.
And Orange County is beautiful.
It is.
Yeah.
You have a huge Latino population, and everyone's like, habla español to me, and I'm like, no, lo siento. Like, yeah, I really, really to this day wish I had learned. I do still try to learn. I use, like, Duolingo, but
yeah, I got to practice more.
It's speaking that I need to practice, to be honest, because I can write and read through Duolingo like a rock star, and I'll literally be, like, top performer.
Yeah, Duolingo.
Do it before I go to sleep at night, but I can't. I can't speak.
I'm well, listening comes first. Like, yeah. you probably understand a lot.
Right.
But a lot of people are, like, scared to speak.
That's
it.
Exactly.
And you just have to do it.
I know.
Like, even at the Latin events, when you go, like, there are a lot of people that just speak Spanish. You gotta just, like...
It's like, yeah, you know how it is. You have to, you go to an event and you're, like, around people. You're not trying to sound like you have a five-year-old, that you're gonna have a five-year-old intellect or,
yeah,
like,
I know,
like
I know.
Speaking level.
So you go to California, you're 15, and that's a high school, right?
Yeah, high school.
Okay, so you start there, so you have an easy transition.
It was not easy.
Oh, was it?
No, because I went from like a school of 300 people in my class to 3,500 people.
Oh my.
And they like, you know, they would make fun of my accent, my Oklahoma accent. But the reality was, is there were so many good things to distract me, like the beach and sports there and people there. And I
what sports do you play?
Played softball and basketball.
Of course.
Yeah.
We all play softball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, and this is the time, you know, back then, like, I didn't even understand my queerness back then. Like, I just hung out with all the lesbians and I didn't even know they were lesbians, and then none of us labeled it at that time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's so funny looking back at those pictures. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I look such
a... yeah, like, so weird. But did you know that you liked women? Do you identify? Lesbian?
Yeah, I identify as a lesbian. So, I feel like I really... started coming out when I was 21. Before that, I was trying to get validation from getting a boyfriend and like thinking that I needed to fall in love with a guy and not really understanding like my thoughts or feelings about women. I always liked being friends with women and liked being around women and had a level of attraction to them. But I still had that shy child that, like, inner child that didn't know what to do with it and didn't even, like I said, it didn't even recognize because you didn't know, I didn't know any lesbians at that time. And the ones that you did oftentimes were so outcasted that you were just like, I don't want that right now.
But you were never like, I like women.
I never came out, even to myself until I was 21. But 21 was really interesting because... I had all these roommates that were straight, and I turned 21 before everyone, so I had to find, on my birthday, we wanted to go out, and I had to find a place where I could drink that they could go to, and guess what
Where'd
I picked?
Where'd you go?
The strip club.
The strip club. 18
and but that's, so I could, you know, so for me, I was like, 21st birthday versus drinking, for me, it was like women. I mean, and I still, in my mind, just thought that I was progressive. I like the edgy things. I didn't know like that I really like how much I desired women, but I did.
So what happened at 21 that made you,
I think just starting to see that. And then I started going in San Diego to, queer places. And I felt like I was in heaven. I just was like, oh my God.
It clicked.
Oh, it totally clicked. Yeah.
So where was who was your first girlfriend? Did you have one? Like,
I had several chaotic relationships. My first relationships were chaotic. I started going to the gay clubs, and the first one, I was seduced by the most beautiful femme. And I was, at the time, like, I was so awkward looking, I feel like. I feel like I stayed awkward looking for about the...
Awkward looking like how?
I just couldn't understand, like, if I wanted to be a tomboy, and I know some people don't like using that word anymore, but, like, I guess a soft butch, or...
Yeah.
If I was going to be a dom femme or if I was going to be a super femme.
There's like, so many labels.
I know. But see, I could, at that time, like, I would look at it as, like, I can range on all of it, but I was, like, trying to figure out what type of woman I wanted to attract.
Right.
And so I was first seduced by a femme. I mean, and it was the most, I mean, she was beautiful, and she kind of set the stage, I feel like, for the next 24 years of what I'm really like attracted to. After her, you know, a femme like her was so rare at the time. So after her, I would date tomboys, and I'd always catch myself trying to like have them straighten their hair and put makeup on them and like turn
like
them femme,
them
even though I was also dressing femme and they wanted.
Oh, you were dressing. You were
I was like a femme tomboy, I guess.
Okay.
And so that's why, I mean, it was so confusing because I was like, okay, I didn't realize like I really wanted a feminine, I really wanted to be dominant.
Right.
And that I wanted to be a tomboy, so I would end up finding tomboys and try to like switch them into femme.
You're like finding projects.
Exactly.
But you always liked like you've always felt like you've been the dominant.
Like, yeah, protected. And honestly, like, I think what patriarchy did is it made me feel like I needed to be submissive. So I kept trying to sort of figure out a way to be submissive.
Right.
And then those relationships with the women who were trying to be more tomboy and dominant with me, they always flipped. And I always ended up being more dominant. I always ended up being the top. And it was like, and they would be embarrassed about it. It didn't make sense really? At that time. Well, at that time, I mean, this is like
the
beginning
what year
of the century.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
I forget how old I am.
2001 to 2004. Oh, so, like, 2001 is when I was 21, 2004, like, 24, I started having these chaotic relationships with tomboys. Those tomboys at that time, and I don't know if people still do, were so toxic. I mean, they would mimic masculinity, and they would pull all the toxicity of, like, how men would treat women, and they put me through, you see those TikToks where people are like, you've never experienced like a breakup and it puts you like in like just a state of depression and anxiety and all this stuff.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Those tomboys in back in that time like put me through it.
I mean, there's still women these days that are the same.
For sure. For sure. Like,
not much has changed.
No, it hasn't.
It's crazy. Yeah. So did you tell your family?
So at 24, I told my brothers and they kind of ignored it. They wanted to believe that because I had been in a relationship with a boy man, like high school ish, that I was more bi and that I could just choose to be more bi with men. And I was also confused because I was like, wow, this is causing so many issues. Like, I can't just come out. It's like becoming a problem. And so I actually tried to come out to my mom and I had a very challenging time. She did not take it well. Mm-hmm. And I had to lie about it and act like, and retract what I said and act like that I was basically wigged out on drugs and alcohol and I didn't know what I was saying.
No.
So like my
because
family,
she didn't take it well?
Yeah, I mean like super not well. And
wow. Like what, like crying? Like...
No, like threatening suicide.
Oh no.
And so my brothers told me to basically retract the statement and make up something. And so I made up that I was an alcoholic drug abuser that was going to rehab, and she
you
said...
You made that up?
Yeah. And just, as why I was so upset and trying to tell her something and saying stuff about my sexuality, and she was trying to figure out why I was saying stuff, and so she said,
wow.
Oh my gosh, basically she said she was so glad that that's all it was and that I wasn't a lesbian.
She'd rather that you be
a drug addict... all that than be a lesbian.
That is so crazy.
So that kicked into gear of me hiding my lifestyle from her. And I ended up with a woman when I was 27 to 31 and we were engaged. And I was like, you know what? F my family. I'm just going to live this life. And right. I stopped going home on, holidays. I stopped having them come visit me. I basically, like, separated my life from them and would just say, I'm broke and busy.
You distance yourself.
For sure.
You distance yourself. And that's what you have to do when your family doesn't accept you. I mean, what else are you going to do? Like, be completely unhappy.
Yeah.
And were you going through, like, therapy at that time? Like, what
helped
you get through that?
Well, so, at that time in your 20s, you're sort of, like, still rebellious. And I was like, F them, you know, I'm just going to live my life. But then things became problematic because... me and that relationship that person was treating me terribly and that was causing me a lot of anxiety. And as you get older, your friends change and I felt like I needed my family again. And so when that engagement broke off, I decided to do something that I, at this point in my life, can't believe I did, but I went back in the closet trying to do what I needed to do to get my family back and to be back integrated into that sort of world.
So you were like, I'm not seeing women again.
Yeah.
I'm going to start dating men.
Yeah. And I did. I did everything to make myself as marketable as possible.
Did you change the way you like dressed and?
Yeah, I became super hyper femme. This is like, you know, I'm sharing like the thick of it. I got implants. I got, because I was trying to be as marketable as possible. I wanted in my mind to please my family. I wanted to find a husband. I wanted to get kids. And I looked at it as like this project. I'm going to find a guy that I tolerate so that I can have my family back and so I can live this life. And
that is wild.
Yeah. Created the relationship again with my mom. We would talk almost every day. And
she never knew about, obviously, the engagement to the previous...
To the woman. I don't think so. No, and that was okay. It's like you're sharing... An engagement was, in a way, is so happy. You're sharing with everyone. You have engagement parties. But it's like I had to do that completely separate from...
You had to hide who you were. Yeah. So, and what about your dad?
My dad passed when I was 17.
I'm so sorry.
So I don't know how accepting he would be it or not. Like, right. So, you know, part of me, we had a really good relationship and all of that stuff, but I honestly don't know.
Right.
My hope is that he would have knocked some sense into my mom in the sense of like, you know what, like, you know, she's still a good child, a good daughter. Cause I was literally like, I was the daughter that did everything for me.
Well, you weren't a drug addict. You were on the street, like, you know what I mean?
But I would, like, take her on vacations instead of friends or instead of people I wanted to be with. I would nurture her so much and trying to be the best daughter. And But
being a lesbian was like...
Yeah, it was like...
So was is fun. Your family... is everyone in Bolivia on her side?
Yeah, on her side.
And are they super religious?
At this point in time, I don't know. There's been such a disconnect, but yeah. Okay. The religion part is very much part of it, but she sort of had this thing where it was like she's fine with gay people, just not in her family. And also there's a very patriarchal side to her, which is that I honestly believe if one of my brothers came out, she would be okay, but not with me. I'm the daughter that needs to, like, give her validation of, like, if she's talking about, you know, what her kids have done in their life, right, having marriage and grandkids. Like, that was her way to get status, I think. And because she couldn't get me to do that, I feel like she felt like it was a disappointment.
Right. Wow. But, and, I mean, you're talking about this so freely now. I mean, what's happened with
her? I cut her off.
You cut your mom off. Completely.
Yeah, because completely. And it's been the best thing I've ever done because
wow.
That, if you saw me back then, my lack of, you've seen me when we go out. I carry myself with a decent amount of confidence.
Yeah, for
sure. I don't look like I'm somebody that.
I would have never guessed.
For sure.
Yeah.
I had no confidence during that entire time period because the voice I heard of all the disappointment or when you're looking in the mirror, whatever, was always her voice of just negativity. And it's one of the things that I would tell people, you know, when it comes to coming out and how I went back in the closet, literally trying to regain this relationship with my family and be the daughter my mom always wanted, is that at some point in time, you'll realize that if your parents love you conditionally already, they'll conditionally love you again sometime in the future and it'll come to head at some point. It did. She later on just kept exposing like how toxic and negative she was towards me if I didn't fit in this box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm someone who is pretty successful. I do a lot of man-like things. And she hated it. She hated that expression. She hated me not submitting to patriarchy. She hated it. So one of the things I do is like activism and
right.
on the street and, you know, police would always try to stop me. She hated it. Like it made her so upset, not because of police, but because it wasn't what a feminine woman should be doing,
right?
Or you should be finding a husband or whatever. So it was like everything I did was constantly up for
machista
scrutiny. Yeah.
Mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I think a lot of Hispanic moms are like that, I hear. You know, they'll have sons. They treat the sons different. They treat the daughter.
110%.
Yep. And
in reality, the daughter, I always feel like, is the reflection of the mother.
For sure. You know,
and there's like a frustration there that who knows what your mom went through, that she had.
She went through a terrible time, but that excuse you can't.
No, it's not an excuse. It's not an excuse, but I just feel like, you know, there's no excuse for her not to, for a parent not to accept a child.
Well,
just for being gay. I mean, there's.
I agree to that. I guess what I was saying is that I gave her that excuse for so long.
Right.
So I felt guilty for what she went through as a child. And I knew that her antics and all this stuff and the way she treated me was because of that. So I forgave her for it. But forgiving her for it and trying to be the recipient of her toxicity or never being good enough or whatever was affecting me and my life to such a negative degree that I had to cut it off. And when I cut it off, I now realize that I shouldn't have been excusing that behavior, and I shouldn't. For so long, people are like, but it's your mother. And I'm like, you have no idea how negatively this affects me and my personality and my confidence when I have someone constantly devaluing me and degrading me.
It doesn't matter who it is.
For sure.
I believe that, like family or not, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
Wow, so you cut her off at what age? How many years ago?
40. So I'm 44.
You're
so
44.
4 years ago. I cut her off like a couple years after I stopped dating men. And like I said, I went back in the closet. It blows my mind that I went back in the closet.
Wow.
Like seeing how I am today and everything. So it was like 10 years in my 20s. I was fully out and I felt so proud of it. And then... in my 30s, I went back in the closet. I hated myself. I literally hated myself. I'm the type of person that, you know, I was trying so hard to live under this, like, guise of, you know, what this society makes you feel like you have to be or what you have to do.
Which a lot of people do.
Yeah. And I went back into the closet, hated myself, and then... when I decided, like, this is not who I am, and cut my mom off, most confident I've ever been. I hate that it's late, this late in life, but I'm the most confident and...
You felt free, maybe.
Totally
right?
Free and liberated.
Yeah.
Like, completely liberated from all of that.
Did she ever try to... did you ever have one last conversation with her before?
The last conversation was a toxic one, and I said, this is the last time you're ever going to hear my voice, and I've never contacted her, and she's never contacted me.
And what about your brothers? Are they...
So, one brother sort of, had a very similar reaction. Like, I haven't talked to him. The other one I talked to, but it's very surface level and it's, you know, he ignores the subject, but I wouldn't say any of them have ever championed me. So I'm definitely one of those people that to be out and gay, like, I've had to completely sever my family relationship. So when I moved to DC or the different cities I've been, I am doing it like without, there's no support system at all. And so I definitely rely on creating friendships to create that type of support system. And that's part of it. I'm sure people literally feel the same way. To be authentic means that they'll lose everything.
Yeah.
And I'm a perfect example. I had to lose it all, but I'm telling you, the other side is that even without them, the other side is so liberating. I feel the best I've ever felt.
Yeah.
I can look myself in the mirror and be like, I love that person looking back at me. Never was able to say that.
That's
before.
Beautiful. And I know several people that just come to my head right away that don't come out because they don't want to lose their family. And they know if they do, they will. And there are people that live in the closet their whole lives.
Yeah.
You know, and you're on the other side of that. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I mean, everyone has their own, you know, I don't want to judge anyone for their decision. Like, thankfully, I had a very, like, accepting mom. So I never went through that. But, like, it takes a really strong person to be able to handle that.
It's devastating. You know? But, again, if somebody is feeling like, you know, it's too much, they're back in the closet or they've been in and they know that they need to come out, while it's devastating to lose all those people, I'm telling you, you cannot be the best version of yourself in your life that way. You can't. You have to be authentic. And a lot of the patriarchal concepts will not allow you to be the best version of you.
No. And you only live once. I know. Your life is so short.
It really is.
It passes us by, yeah. You know what I mean? So, wow. And who knows, maybe one day she'll reach out to you and accept you, or maybe not.
Honestly, I just...
You don't expect it, but you're...
It wouldn't do anything for me because I'm healed from it.
You're happy.
And that's why I can talk about it like this. There was a time period where I couldn't, and that is because the conditional behavior came back with another subject. And when you feel, when you realize it was always conditional, you realize there's nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
There will always be a reason they won't give you that full love, you know, because it's conditional.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you went through
that. No, I appreciate that. But I want, you know, with this, I want other people to hear that you can be so happy on the other side of that because you're authentic.
For sure. And I thank you so much for sharing your story. I know there's going to be people that have, that can relate, that are either in the closet and don't want to come out or have and have lost their families because of it. You know, this is the point of these conversations. It's for somebody to have an impact at least in one person's life, as I keep saying it, is the goal. So
for sure.
I'm sure.
And, you know, coming to your events, I mean, that's part of it. I'm one of those people that come there, and you know how I always talk about camaraderie and building the community and everything, because there are a lot of people like me that the community is all they have. And so we need those people to feel comfortable with coming to our spaces to have fun and get to know other people that have gone through a similar experience.
Yeah, I know. I love that. I love seeing people make connections, and I have a lot of people that come alone. So
yeah, I do. I come solo all the time.
Yeah.
I just show up and I'm like, you know,
yeah, you're like, hey, here I am.
Just meet people. And I do. I meet people. So another thing is how you showed up on Queer Ultimatum. You know, I didn't know you before those events, and I didn't know you were in the area that I had just moved in. And one of the things when I watched Queer Ultimatum that I loved about seeing you represent is a non-toxic lesbian on TV. I loved that you put such a balance in perspective, because even though, you know, with my story about coming out, it ended up having some chaotic elements, I've never been that person in the community. I've always been very stable. I've always been very level-headed. And so I really loved that there was representation of somebody that just was a quality person who, you know, thought logically, wasn't like embracing this sort of the chaos that TV wants. And I think I had told people that this is so important to have representation of a lesbian who is just level-headed and like gets it.
Well, and it took a long time to get there, because I've been toxic before. When we filmed that show, thank you for saying that, by the way, but when we filmed the show, I had just come out of a nasty breakup.
Okay.
Which ironically was my most toxic relationship, and I went through so much therapy, so much work, self-work and self-reflection and growth in such a fast pace. I feel like when I went on the show, I just felt calm and level-headed, like you said, and I think that showed on TV.
It did.
But I wasn't always like that, and you know, it took a lot of growth to get there. But I feel like TV is never going to show people that are level-headed, because it doesn't make TV.
Right, I agree.
It doesn't make entertainment, you know what I mean? But
to people that are watching, they watch the lesbians and the representation on TV, and they start relating, that is who I'm similar to, or I can relate to that. And And oftentimes I'll watch and I'm like, I can't relate to any of them. And I definitely related to how you presented yourself. And so that healing and that work really showed. And again, so then when the event started, you know, for me, I was like, you know, I'm all about supporting it, because she's trying to create something for people like myself.
And that's what I want now. I used to do the events back when I was younger, probably during the time, I was 24, 25, mid-20s, and it was way different than what it is now. My vision now, after the show, I was it's a great time to bring it back.
Yeah.
And bring all these connections together. And I feel like now it's so different. I don't know, you're at a different place, you know, you grow, you learn, you become a better person every day. And the people that are like are coming now, it's just everyone's more mature. It's kind of like an older crowd. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know, it's something that I've always envisioned, and hopefully it gets better. But the reality is, like, the women in their younger 20s are the ones that have the energy to go out all of the time. And the women in, like, their 30s, 40s, 50s that are coming to the events, they don't want to go out all of the time, right? They want to, like, stay home. They want to travel. They want to do all these different things. So that's the hard part about, like, the consistency of having just people show up, which is another topic I want to talk about, like, later on, just how the community always wants these spaces, but we don't really support these spaces.
Well, that's what I was saying, that, you know, getting funding to subsidize the spaces.
Yeah.
Is important because a space has to stay consistent, and sometimes lesbians take a long time to catch on to going and supporting a space, and a space will empty out before it even had the opportunity to flourish, and nobody can carry that with their own money. You're not going to be like,
I mean, I do this with my own, right? You know, and it's like when we met, you told me what you did for work, which we'll get into in a minute, but like, I was really interested because I was like, well, I do all of this by myself.
Yeah.
Like, thankfully now
it's a labor of love. It's you know,
it makes me happy. Like, I mean, it's a fulfillment. It's like a, I don't know, just makes me feel fulfilled. Like I'm doing like a purpose. Like I have a purpose. That's my purpose.
Yeah.
Like to bring people together.
Yeah.
And I've said this before, like at my events, I've had people become best friends. I've had exes reunite, rekindle their relationship. I've had people get married that met at my events
that's
and have
awesome.
Babies. And,
that's
and,
amazing.
You know, things like that that just make me like, you know, get chills.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. So making that better, I just want like the community to like step it up and support the spaces, you know? And I can also say that in my, like, I don't really go out often. I told you that. I was like, I just really go to my events now. And sometimes I'm more of a homebody. So I'm kind of like speaking to myself too. Like sometimes I'll be really tired and be like, hey, tonight I'm going to go to Aloho, which is one of the lesbian bars in DC, just to go support, have a couple drinks, meet a couple people. And every time I do that, like I go to a space, I meet somebody that like becomes like either a really good friend or a really good connection or somebody that like, you know, just I needed to meet. So it's really cool. But yeah, we need more spaces. So I'm all for people just like creating more spaces, or how can we make it better? And the funding, yeah, would be a great help.
Yeah,
a great help.
Yeah, but the city should, and gay community should. The reality is that, you know, all of these cities calling themselves so queer friendly. How are you going to call it queer friendly when there's not one woman's bar in the whole place? Are you talking that it's gay men friendly? And a lot
every city's gay men friendly.
For sure, but they call themselves so inclusive. They spend funding on making inclusivity. They spend funding on so much stuff. They need to subsidize. If they're going to call themselves this equality center, or, you know, that they're a safe space, or that they have spaces, they need to make sure that they keep open a lesbian space.
Yeah.
And like I said, again, that women just take a little bit longer to be able to like start showing up consistently.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not an option to just be like, well, women aren't showing up and the, you know, the leasing prices in that area are too high for women to maintain like that. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a business owner and, you can make, I don't know, $8,000 a month in leasing from a gay men's club, and the gay women's club is barely making ends meet, you're not gonna feel compelled to reduce that amount as a as an owner, right, of that space. But that's where the city comes in and sort of helps offset until the lesbian bar starts having that growth. And they do that with other marginalized communities. So the point is like, we need to start making that happen in different cities, because there's no way that you're gonna talk about, you know, places in New York City, Los Angeles, DC, you name it, where you have this entire queer area without a lesbian bar.
Yeah. No, it makes no
sense. That's not right.
Yeah. You're totally right. And I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
About the city, like, helping
they
out
have them. So much funding and events to make it so queer friendly, but it's like they continue to opt out of realizing that lesbians are not represented. Lesbians don't have a space. And maybe it's not just that it's open from 5 p.m. to midnight. Maybe it is a space that's open all day long, and it caters to, you know, women differently. But that recipe might not be figured out yet.
Right.
Because, again, anybody coming in trying to make it work doesn't have enough time to figure out what the right recipe is.
Yeah, because you open in a couple months,
it's like, done.
We can't afford it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why that I feel like cities need to start helping.
We can get into what you do for work right there.
Like, yeah.
So we're in California. We jumped around a little bit, but how did you end up in DC?
So my life actually has jumped around. I've moved every 3 years. I've lived in LA.
Every 3 years?
Yeah.
In your military life.
Basically, I'm a wanderlust. I'm a Sagittarius. Apparently do that, but, I've lived in LA, the Bay Area, Denver, New York City, Oklahoma, back to LA, and now DC. I don't know what it is. I feel like I was meant to live in Europe and just like country hop or something.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get that out of my system. But my career is as a business development person at a data company, but on the side, I've been a lifelong activist. I've been a street activist protesting for a bunch of different things, mostly marginalized communities. But additionally, I became vegan like, I don't know, 14, 15 years ago. And I started doing activism that encouraged people to basically think about what you're eating. And then I started doing this really crazy activism, which is like a light, which I put messages on walls, like giant walls. And I was doing that for years.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I was like dealing with police all the time. It was wild.
Where at?
Everywhere, walls all over the country.
Really?
And like police interactions, people interactions. I'd put stuff like that made you think, like fact or fiction, you know, 80 billion animals are killed per year so we can eat them. And then people would come and talk to me, and I'd film it on, you know, old school Facebook Live, and like we'd have these interactions. And so I became like kind of a known activist in the vegan community.
Really?
With like, you know, my giant, I mean, these were like 7 stories high messages.
Oh my
I'd get like
God.
A generator. I hacked it. Yeah.
He's back there like.
It was wild. And police, like they thought the mechanism was like this big, like, you know, light that you take out there. And I've had police think it was a bazooka coming with their guns.
Can you say what it is? Or
no? Yeah, it's just like a light projector. But in order to do it outside, you have to get a high-powered, like, think of the concert lights.
Yeah.
And then you put these, what they're called, gobos, and that the shadow or light creates the text on the wall.
Wow.
And you need a generator and all that stuff. And I would do it, like, everywhere, and it became really popular, and I had a following. And I started...
I have to look here. Is it still, like, up? Like,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot.
I'm going to Google you after this.
For sure. Yeah, I've been on the news a bunch of times. I've been, you know, I put the light on giant buildings, hovering freeways. I've done it on, you know, stadiums. I've done it, like, everywhere. Police would come after me all the time. But at the time, what I was doing was legal. And light isn't vandalism. Light isn't because of light production. It's not advertising unless you put like a URL. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And so you would also see me like talk myself out of all these police interactions. I had over 100 police interactions. I've had helicopters. Like,
what?
Sort of, like, it's crazy.
Is that why you've been fleeing city to city? Running away from the cops.
Yeah, and it got a lot of hype again, newscasts, newspapers, all this stuff about me being this like vegan, anti-meat activist. And really, I just wanted people to like really think about what we were doing in the scale of things. In the meantime, I realized that my protesting and trying to get fruits and vegetables more accessible and lower in price, none of that worked through the activism I was doing. Like it got people thinking, but the reality, the food system wasn't changing. And I felt so passionate, and I was like, I don't really understand how the system is so messed up and corrupt, and I don't know how to change it. And so what I did from that point on is spent my time understanding the food system, and I ended up creating a advocacy lobbying group. So now we're like a vegan-membered food justice and fruit and vegetable lobbying group.
That's so
and
cool.
So we have lobbyists in DC. I was in LA at the time.
Right.
And I was leaving the lobbying. So lobbying, to somebody who doesn't know, is really just creating relationships with Congress, or it could be local level or national level.
Right.
And writing legislation and trying to get them to sponsor it.
Right.
Or getting them to push something that you want.
Right. And make a change.
For sure. Literally, right. And our, like, entire public in the United States used to do this before the 70s more than corporations did. And then in the 70s, it flipped. And now people no longer unionize. People no longer centralize what they want through policy. And people barely vote. Mm-hmm. But the reality is most change happens through policy. And we've completely let corporations take over lobbying. Lobbying is named after people sitting in the lobby waiting on the politician.
Oh, look at that.
And so in the 70s, it flipped. And so anyways, I had my white guy lobbyist doing the job of us and thinking that was the best way to do it.
Right.
But I started traveling. And when I came here, food system lobbying is mostly white cowboys from rural states across the United States. And guess what white rural cowboys don't like? Lesbians. Mm. Or anything else that is progressive. So they control our food system, but they also don't give a shit about people like us, right? And that was like starting to connect with me. My white lobbyist might be able to speak to these people, but how is that really holistically representing like me, mm-hmm. and other people like me? Because my activism wasn't just about veganism and making fruits and vegetables accessible. It should be about, you know, building the economic wealth of brown and black farmers and helping brown and black consumers,
right.
Helping everybody. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You want to make sure that the policy represents
minorities.
More.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. And so when I was at the Capitol one of the time visiting, Capitol Police, who was black, and all of the security and Capitol PD and all the high level, they were all black, and walking inside of this building named after a congressperson that literally had ties to the KKK, all the people inside that worked in that building were black, and then you see the white politicians walking in and
right.
out. And I was like, wow, the entire foundation and heartbeat of DC is like mostly black people supporting people who are terrible and are working in a building that like the KKK basically has ties to. And it just rubbed me the wrong way. Like, it felt like we're almost protecting these people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Brown and black people are protecting them being there. We're just letting them be there. And that Capitol PD comes up to me and he's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, my tattoos and everything. And I just don't look the part at all in
right.
that area. And I'm like, no, I know. I don't have the cowboy hat and everything.
I had Capitol PD here today. I'm laughing.
So he's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like trying to find my white lobbyist. I'm like, I'm here with my lobbyist. And he's like, no, I mean, we don't see people like you here. What are you doing here? And I'm like, well, I'm a founder of a federal vegan food justice lobbying group. And, I came here to meet with politicians. And he said, we never see people like you in here. It's always the white cowboys and a few of the white women interns, and that's about it. And
wow.
He's like, how do we get more of you here? We need more of you here.
Yeah.
And it like dawned on me that like, I can't just push my white lobbyist to speak in there, because otherwise it's going to just be a food system with fruits and vegetables access. And
yeah, you
and
have to get in there.
Yeah, that doesn't actually change anything significant for brown, black people, minorities, queer people, women, all of it. Like, we have to be in there. And so now I sort of teach people why this is so important. The paradigm of activism needs to not just be on the street. We need to be in DC, and we need to be, pushing legislation, learning how to write it. And I learned how to write it with AI. Like, I'm scrappy as hell, right? AI is
AI, like, AI yeah. needs to run shit.
It does. Connie plus AI. That should be my resume.
That. Yo, that's so amazing. That's amazing work. And I mean, I hope we get more people like that look like us in there.
For sure.
Yeah, we don't see any.
For sure.
And all that generation, like, I mean, everyone in there is just like so old school and just, they're just all white.
Yeah.
Nothing against white people, but it's like, we need diversity. For sure. Like, for sure.
For sure. Yeah. And there are white people that do try to check off the boxes of what minorities want, but they're not going to do it if we're not in there telling them, hey, you need to listen to us and hear our voices. That's part of it, is like empowering people to know that your voice matters. And remember, if you start back at the beginning where I said I didn't have a voice in Oklahoma, right. and now I'm literally shaking
hands. Now you are the voice.
Literally. And I'm shaking hands with Congress and people that you would never dream of me being able or capable of doing.
And do you think that's why? Like, your story? Like, that's
maybe.
Why
yeah, I mean,
you're doing this work?
Maybe, because finding my voice, I really feel like it empowered me not only to speak about myself, but additionally speak on behalf of others. And
yeah.
I'm actually really good at it. I mean, if I... Congress doesn't let you take video cameras, but if you could see me in that room, like, owning these guys...
Right.
You know, they... I
can
make,
you take me one day? I'd love to see
I mean, you absolutely can. For sure.
I'll go Instagram Live and
yeah.
film all these people.
For sure, because I have a data background, and in that data background, you know, I bring my laptop, and I oftentimes show them, like,
right.
stuff that I'm saying and back it up with data, and it shows them fraud and a bunch of stuff that they're uncomfortable with. But the reality is, you know, if there were more people like mm-hmm. me that just had the audacity, and you don't need to be perfect at it. Like, you could be wrong at it. Think of how many yeah. politicians say stupid shit, stupid stuff.
All of them.
All of them, for sure.
98% of them.
And why did they get there? Because they had the audacity and they're okay with messing up. And yeah. that's where I'm at. I have the audacity. I'm okay with messing up. I come super prepared, but I'm still okay with messing up. And I
which is so like, I mean, from your story and what you tell me and how you used to be mute. And
I was
like how
so
you,
mute.
To now, like yeah. listen to yourself. Like you've grown
I know.
So much. Like you've progressed so much.
Yeah.
You're
and coming out literally, I think, helps with that. Like that authentic self,
yeah.
me showing up there like this. If you saw, I swear, one day I'll share my femme pictures of me.
I'd
also.
Can you share one so we can put it up?
Yeah, I'll share several. It's right. wild. And like. The confidence that I have now, I used to be 30 pounds skinnier, hyper femme, like...
We used to all be 30 pounds
I know,
skinnier.
But I had the least confidence then when I looked like
yeah.
exactly what patriarchy needed me to look like. And yeah. I, 30 pounds bigger, have the most confidence.
The best, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so yeah. rewarding when you
feel
that way.
I mean, you feel
way.
Like you're, you know, like when you feel good in your skin, like, I feel like I'm there too, like... If you figure out, like, how you dress makes you happy, how you act makes you happy, that, like, you're not being judged all the time,
yeah.
right? And, like, if you are, you're like, fuck you, like, this is who I am. And you realize, like, the people that love you for you are there. And
for
the
sure.
people that aren't, like, don't matter anymore. I feel like that's, I mean, it's a good place to be.
And then the other thing that I like about where I'm at in my look is it communicates that I'm a lesbian. Before, one of the challenges that I felt like
right.
I had is I had to have this coming out story all the time where mm-hmm. it was like, you know, I am, no, I'm
and
actually
people don't believe you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so where I'm at now that has helped me so much is that it communicates that I'm a lesbian. Men know that I'm a lesbian. You know, they're not like, are you sure? I don't get that as much anymore. And
well, the crazy part is what you just said. Not, I don't get that as much.
Right.
Like what yeah. men and like straight people don't realize is that like even you could dress like super butch, right? But like a man will always, it will never fail, be like, you haven't been with the right man. If you're with me, you'll change your mind.
For sure.
You haven't had the right, you know what I'm saying? Like all these things, like there are no such things as a lesbian. Like you will always want to be with a guy. All these fucking comments that you hear your whole life and it's like.
So annoying.
You know, that's like, I go to straight places all the time. And I even have, like, I've had people in my family be like, why the pride flag? Like, why do you have to go to, why is it always like a gay thing? You know, and like people don't understand the struggle of like every fucking day, every single place you go. Is it is a straight place.
Yeah.
Like, imagine, and I've told somebody this in my family, I'm like, it's a straight man, one of my uncles, and I've been like, imagine, like, because I took him to a lesbian bar, and he was like, oh my god, like, it was his first time, and he was impacted, obviously, he's a very, like, macho guy, right? And for him, he's like, hey, I had a hard time, but I love you, like, I went because I wanted to support you, which I appreciated, but I was like, imagine if, like, you go every day or every time you go out to a lesbian bar, yeah, and that's how you feel, right?
Exactly.
And it's like put yourself in another person's pair of shoes. Like, it's like, it's not easy. It's not easy going. I like dancing. You like dancing. I like salsa, bachata, all this stuff. Most of the places are straight places, and every fucking time it's a guy that's like, hey, let's go dance. Hey, can I get your number? Hey, can I? Some will, like, slap your ass. Some will touch your boob. Like, all these things that people don't see. Where, like, in the space that I create and, like, the space that other people in the community create for lesbians or queer women, like, we don't have that, you know? And it's a beautiful thing.
It is.
Like, to just have women around.
For
that,
sure.
Like, women. It's like,
I know.
You finally feel like you're, like, at home.
Yeah.
Like, in a place you belong. So, yeah.
I think women need to, I mean, we can help each other with language that gets men to sort of leave you alone. I'm really good at sort of, like,
I can't imagine you, like,
I just, if I'm on a date with a woman and a guy tries to come up to us and say stuff, I'm really good at just sort of, like, you know, making him know where he stands in that vicinity.
Yeah.
And I think probably emasculates them a little bit, but it shuts them down. It doesn't make them come back.
Right.
And I've learned,
yeah, in a respectful
that,
way.
For
like
sure.
Yeah.
So I've learned how to navigate through that, those comments that some men will still do. But I guess the authenticity really speaks out, because the authenticity, I feel like, makes men not question me as much as they used to.
Right.
So I'm very happy that I've gotten to that point.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Like, so, men now oftentimes want to be my friend and bro me. Like, they seek me out and, like, I saw you, and it's not like it's different. They don't want to get with me now. They want to be friends.
Yeah. And that's a cool place to be. I mean, you always get the one here and there, mm-hmm, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So do you think you'll stay in D.C.?
I don't know. I think it depends on my love life.
How's that going?
Is it?
It's dating. Dating's hard. But
dating's so hard.
There are more women than men in D.C. There are a lot of women in D.C. and a lot of single women in D.C. and a lot of gay women in D.C.
Yeah.
It's a great liberal area. Like, the queer community is huge here.
Yeah.
So I feel like you're in a good spot to find somebody if you're looking, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so I love the beach. I love L.A. I came here because of policy. So for me, my draw is back at the beach.
Yeah.
But with that said, if I were to meet someone here, I mean, I am such a, you know, when I get into a relationship and I want to, like, become a good girlfriend, I map out all of those things. And so if that person can only live here and I am that in love with her, I would absolutely stay. But as far as staying, I don't know. We'll see.
Like, thank you so much. I've enjoyed this time. And to close out, I'll just ask you, what do you think would be a piece of advice that you'd say to, like, your younger self, your younger Connie, like, back when you're, like, 18?
Honestly, it's that authenticity. I wish I could take away those 10 years that I tried to fit into someone else's idea of me. I would have loved to have been out and proud and this confident starting in 30, you know, not starting, but continuing all the way through. And so I would tell 18-year-old self to not fear what your family or society says are the repercussions of you coming out, and realize that the repercussions are worse by not coming out.
That's beautiful. It's true. Just be true to yourself, to who you are, and own it and love it.
Yeah.
Who knows? You would have been president by now.
I know. I
would have changed all the policy.
Can you imagine? Just picture that for a second. A freaking woman president with a woman on her side, like, as the first lady.
I want to see that before.
So do I. That would be so powerful.
That'd be sick.
I'm going to do that in a city council.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, thank you so much.